Welcome to the Intertidal Talks podcast. I am Kendra, marine biologist and your host. This podcast is meant to teach, inform, and entertain you about all things marine science and conservation. If you are a marine scientist or advocate with a story to share, you can contact me at intertidaltalks@gmail.com. Want to join our marine science community? Join us at patreon.com/kendi_marinebio. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Intertidal Talks. I am really excited because today I get to talk to one of my dear friends, Connor, who I know in real life, one of the first people I think I've talked to that I know in real life, which is awesome. So how about you introduce yourself, who you are, where you're from, and what you're doing now?
Hi, everybody. First and foremost, I am so excited to be here. You are one of my favorite people, and I'm so, so honored that you asked me to be a part of this podcast. So, hello, everybody. My name is Connor Heeman. Pronouns he, him, anyone was interested. Very plainly, I'm a guy with a camera who loves the ocean. A little more in depth about me, I'm an amateur freediver, underwater photography hobbyist, and recently graduated with a degree in marine biology.
Yeah. Where did you graduate from?
So I graduated from the lovely school, the University of Hawaii at Manoa. Started there in 2016. Took me 9 semesters and 53 classes, but we got there.
What was your favorite class at UH and your least favorite class?
My least favorite class was anything that had to do with math. This is nothing against my professors. You all were great. You tried your hardest. Numbers and I don't mix. So anything that had to do with math was bad, which as a marine bio student, you got to take chemistry, physics, calculus, biology has math. Everything has math. So that was fun. Luckily, though, I did get to take a lot of really cool classes, especially living here in Hawaii. You're right next to the ocean. You have a lot of access to a lot of field stuff. One of my classes is called Aloha Kanaloa. It was for upper level Hawaiian language students, which luckily I did take Hawaiian. At UH, so I got to partake, and basically every class we went to a different beach, talk story about different histories of the sites, different practices, all sorts of stuff like that. So it was really cool seeing the cultural aspect, not just the marine bio side of things. And of course, everything that dealt with the marine life, I luckily got to take a class where the professor is actually now my boss. She was teaching a class on marine mammals and cetaceans, and now I am employed by her, which I think we'll get into a little later.
Yes, we shall. What made you want to study marine science?
Honestly, ever since I was little, like for as long as I can remember, I've always loved the water, I've loved the ocean, marine life. The Little Mermaid was my favorite movie as a child. And then the 13th year, Free Willy, everything. That one for different reasons than people think. But I've just always loved the ocean. I've always known I wanted to be a marine biologist / zoologist. We'll throw that in there because I did love the animals the most. But I've always known this was meant to be my calling. And for a long time, I actually didn't think it would happen. And then it did. I couldn't be happier.
That is the dream. And so I met you through diving, through you took pictures for Kenna. I got invited on a dive from Kenna, and that's when I first met you. So how did you get into diving, and then how did that lead into underwater photography, or was it photography then diving?
It was definitely diving first. obviously, like, I moved here. Of course, the most favorite thing to do would be get in the water, snorkel. There's a lot of good spots around here. My very first friend at UH, her name is Zoe Curley. I don't think she'll hear this, but hi. She came to UH from Guam, and she was this badass freediver, and she taught me kind of the basics and really got me on the journey towards it. Like, she showed me some of the videos and some of the stuff she could do, and I was just so amazed, because I had snorkeled before, but this is something entirely different and so much more immersive and to the ocean world. And I loved it, and I became obsessed. And so just her and I and our friends, we would just go out into the water as often as we can and just, you know, just gain more experience being out there. Eventually, I got a GoPro, just kind of documented just, you know, the little whatever activities we were doing at the time. So I was definitely more in the water for a few years before I actually got into the photography part of it. I had won this Instagram giveaway, and it came with an Axis Go, which is this fairly heavy duty, really fun and easy to use underwater phone case for iPhones. And I literally had just gotten an iPhone at the time, so it like worked out perfectly. And with that, I started to be able to take nicer photos. Like, I could take photos more easily. I mean, it was the whole setup. It had a dome, it had a trigger. It was so much more user-friendly than the GoPro. And so at that point, I realized, I'm like, oh, I can take actually like really cool stuff with this. And like, I've always liked photography. I've always thought it was a really cool medium. Mm-hmm. Never really got into it myself, but I appreciated it. So this was kind of my first like real dip into taking photos for the sake of taking photos. And just over time, I sort of started to kind of like develop my own aesthetic and learn a lot more of the technique and stuff to it before finally actually devoting my efforts to photography a little more, getting a DSLR with an underwater housing. You know, I'm still a hobbyist. I'm not professional by any means. I don't claim to be a photographer and a guy with a camera. I like to take photos, but I've definitely gotten to the point where I'm happier with the photos I produce.
You're a very good photographer, if I do say so myself. Don't
I mean, like, I do say so myself too.
There you go. I just love diving with you. It's super fun. And so I've loved watching your photography grow because it's evolved and changed and it's beautiful and I love you.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, you, our special little pot has definitely been a huge influence on what I do, mainly because I love using my photos as a means to show what I love the most with anything or care. I'm not here for, we'll get into the social media side of it, but I'm not here to be famous. I'm not here to be, you know, the number one photographer out there. I just like showing the willing world what I love most. Mm-hmm. And luckily I was able to do that with a group of people who shared the same passions and morals and love for the ocean that I do.
Yeah.
So I think you, I think all of our friends who stuck with us all that time. And
so before we get into the whole social media side, what are some of your maybe like favorite experiences from diving, whether it's just like if there's like a particular dive that stands out that was really special and cool, or just maybe all of them, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there have been so many over the years, and they've all, in a way all kind of blend together. But I think one of my favorite parts about driving is like experiencing a first. So like for me, it's every time I see a new species for the first time, it's just so fun. Coming from the scientific side of things, where like I appreciate, you know, the difference in species and just how rich our oceans are and how much life is out there. I love being able to experience those things for myself. And so, I mean, obviously, like marine mammals are my number one, they're my favorite, most people's favorite. So, like, yeah, like dolphins, monk seals, whatever, like those were great. But I think some of my most memorable and favorite firsts were my first scorpion fish, my first manta ray, and my first sea spider. Mainly because all of those things were completely by accident.
Yeah.
Each one I had, it was not an encounter that, you know, was, I mean, no encounters are like thought of in advance, but each one happened so spontaneously and randomly. And actually, to this day, I still have only seen that one manta ray and that one sea spider. So those were my first and onlys, which I think is just kind of fun. You know, it's once you see something, it doesn't make it less special the next time you see it. But it is something about that first time that's just like, oh,
yeah,
it holds a special place here, a place in your heart.
Oh, for sure.
But I think, you know, like as far as the actual dives go, I think just any of the night dives. Last summer, we had just started to do them, which I had always wanted to do, but was really hesitant. I don't want to do something like that without a certain group with a certain level of experience. And we ended up just going at the end of summer. Really, I think we went 3 or 4 times. But it's just something about going at night is so unreal. Like the amount of life, like all the invertebrates, which brings up another one of my favorite firsts was bioluminescent plankton. Uh-huh. When we turned all the lights off and like if you just move the water, it just like lights up and it was just so super cool. So that's something I'm really excited about for this summer. Is to do that one. That's just completely, it's so terrifying yet peaceful.
Yeah,
it's just so hard to explain. So I'm not here to advocate dangerous activities, but if you get the chance to go at night responsibly, safely, respectfully, do it.
I still want to do it. Because all those pictures from your guys' night dives were so cool. Oh my goodness.
Well, when travel restrictions are limited and it is safe, you're going to have to.
Yes. Hopefully by the end of, I'm hoping maybe by fall things are better. But who knows? And at that point that I'm just waiting. I'd rather everything be safe before I travel because I can wait. I mean, I don't want to wait, but I can wait and I should, if that makes sense. So awesome experiences while diving. Now we can delve in to, I don't know if they're called, like we call them bad experiences, but our experiences with people within the community, whether it's like directly the Hawaii community of divers or just worldwide, about like diving etiquette and as you kind of said the social media aspect of the underwater photography world. What do you mean by that, to kind of delve in, like what's the issue with some underwater photography that maybe the general consumer wouldn't know?
So I think that finding fame through the exploitation of wildlife has too big of an influence on a lot of photographers. I speak more specifically here in Hawaii, not necessarily in other places because I haven't experienced that. I can only imagine it is similar in a lot of other regions. But basically what I mean by that is I think social media has created this ability for people to capture moments, share them, and go viral for all the wrong reasons, because these moments are completely either illegal or irresponsible in regards to wildlife interaction. Basically, the issues with those two species specifically is that they are very accessible to the average person, the monk seals, because they do spend a lot of time on land, a lot of the popular beaches. They're fairly easy to find in the water. They don't go offshore too far too often. And then, so basically the biggest issue with the spinner dolphins is that they spend the days sleeping. They use the shallow water to rest, whereas at night they'll go off and feed offshore. So unfortunately for them, they are very easy to find just, you know, for snorkelers, a lot of boat tours, because they're just chilling during the day. They're not super active. They're just cruising up and down the coast at a very swimmable distance from shore. So unfortunately, you know, most people who are out in the water at a lot of the popular snorkeling spots are tourists. There are people who are not from here. They don't understand the issues around these animals. It's not something that's made readily available to a lot of people visiting, as far as the regulations behind a lot of these species. So people come here and they don't think to, you know, look up rules ahead of time. And then when they get here, no one tells them. So basically, with marine mammals, you're to stay 50 yards away at all times. You're not allowed to approach within that distance. That goes for monk seals, spinner dolphins, any other cetacean species. Well, I take that back. 50 yards is for spinner dolphins, other dolphin species, small whales, larger whales, so our sperm whales, humpbacks. While less common, you know, people out on boats do experience them fairly often. Those are actually up to at least 100 yards away. So with our larger animals, the restrictions get a little heavier. Just, you know, it's to protect the animals. You don't want to stress them out, potentially hurt them, and for the people as well. These are very large, powerful animals. Even the dolphins, very much for the best to keep everybody apart.
Yeah.
So that brings into the issues of social media, where people no longer seem to care about these restrictions, because you get people going out there, you know, with a large following, taking these, you know, incredible videos. They're, everybody loves to see these animals, but they go out there, they'll get real close, they'll get some cool shots, and they'll put them on Instagram or TikTok and get lots, I don't know how many. So many views, yeah. So many shares, so many likes. But they're completely spreading the wrong idea of how to responsibly interact with wildlife.
Yeah. Well, one of the things everyone should know, you are the most vocal advocate for spinner dolphins when we're out diving. Connor and Claire both will, Claire's another friend, if you look at Connor's page, you'll see her tagged, but they will both yell at people when they are chasing that. It's great. Like, and part of it is because people don't know. But part of the other thing too is we're like these social media influencers that a lot of people only know online. Like we've seen in real life, like while out diving, I've seen an influencer dive into a spinner dolphin pod once on a dive. And from there, like from one thing, for I've told people like in DMs, because I've had people message me about some people and send me pictures and be like, is this legal? And part of it's like, well, you can never tell from how the, well, you know, you can sometimes tell how the person is shooting, like what maybe the subject is doing if there is a diver. But sometimes, like with those videos, it can be manipulated so much. Like things can be put in reverse, things are cut. Like you may not see the whole footage if they are like chasing a pod until like they're in it. Kind of, you know what I mean? That's
exactly.
Like, that's like my thing with it is, and even when I have my own dolphin footage and all of it was taken responsibly, but I still am like, I always want to like put a thing like a disclaimer, almost kind of like what you do. That's like, this was done within regulation, animal approached me, animals passing by, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But when these influencers go viral, or not even like photographers, they might not be an influencer because you're like a photographer, go viral, it encourages, this is the problem, it encourages people to seek out the same interaction because you want that experience. So a lot of people may just look at a photo and think like, oh, that's pretty, but what could be like the harm of approaching, of chasing, of a take on a marine mammal?
So unfortunately, the harm in these instances is basically a disruption of the animal's natural behavior. You know, when it comes to spinner dolphins, like I said, during the day, they're resting. They're trying to sleep. They're trying to gain back the energy that they've lost the night before. A lot of these instances, most people have found you can predict when and where pods will be, typically in the early mornings, and so they can anticipate interactions with these animals. So they'll go out there at their most vulnerable times, and if they're, you know, when you're too close, if you're diving down into the pod, if you're following them, if you're splashing around, what it's doing is it's keeping them alert. It's not giving them the chance to actually stay rested. If you're following them, if you're below them, they may perceive you as a predator. They're using these shallow coastal waters with a lot of sand and a lot of, you know, places where if something is coming towards them, it's going to be visible. A lot of these pods, they have very small calves, they have, you know, vulnerable individuals. And so when they're resting, they want to know that they're going to be protected and safe. So people going into these situations and keeping these animals alert, they're not going to get their rest. They're not going to be able to feed properly. A lot of the disturbances can prevent mating. So if pairs are, you know, in the process of mating and people disrupt that, there is in the long run a very strong possibility that population numbers are going to be affected. If nursing is interrupted, calves are very sensitive to the amount of, you know, stress they can take. And if they're not able to feed properly, that again can in the long run affect the population numbers. So the harm in doing this is that, okay, they're disturbed once. The initial person who took the video, all right, is that one interaction going to have lasting effects? Not likely. But they post it. They get all of these people believing that what they did is okay, that they can go do it themselves. So now you have more people doing it, and more and more. And it's this repeated cycle of more and more people going out there and doing these same interactions. That's what's really the issue, is that it's not just one time. It's going to be over and over and over, day after day, more and more people. As people, you know, they'll start to tag locations, they'll spread so much more as time goes on. And so it's these lasting effects of repeated disruption to these animals' natural behavior that's the issue. And same goes with, you know, monk seals. A lot of videos that I've seen, monk seals, they tend to nap underwater. They'll find a nice little cave in the reef and they'll go down there. And snorkelers will go up to them, and if, you know, the monk seal's sleeping, you wake it up, make it move, it might get aggressive. It's these changes in behavior that are the issue, because you don't want to be impacting wildlife in a negative manner.
Yeah.
And I say this, you know, practice what we preach. I fully support wildlife interactions when done, you know, respectfully. Like, I think experiencing wildlife firsthand is just a necessity. Humans are a part of nature. We're not above other animals. I think it's vital for us to see these things to, you know, improve our appreciation for the home we all share. And it just gives us more reasons to love our environment and to want to just be better.
Yeah.
So I think go out there, see what the world has to offer, but there are good and bad ways to do it.
I will say your monk seal story reminds me of that one time we went diving and I thought you said there's an eel in the cave, and I like eels, and so I dove down and you were like, what are you doing? And I couldn't see, like, I could not see him. I did not see the monk seal at all. And I was like, where's this eel? And I popped up and I still could not see it. And finally you were like, it was a seal. And I looked down and once you said it, I was like, oh crap, I was totally like right next to that. And monk seals freak me out. I do not enjoy their presence in the water because I have seen them charge. And they're cute, they're adorable, awesome. But I would not seek out an interaction with a monk seal. So I was very scared when you told me that it was a seal. And I was very embarrassed that I thought it was an eel and I went to seek after this. And it could have gone very wrong, but it was okay.
See, and yeah, like things, in the end, things are generally fine. But it's like, dolphin, you are highly unlikely to be hurt by a dolphin. It could happen if you know, if the situation went wrong. A monk seal, they are territorial.
Yep.
They are strong. They are massive. They are so quick in the water. They can easily turn aggressive. There have been various accounts of people being attacked for one reason or another. So, you know, these interactions, like, and these regulations that are in place, they are honestly to protect you just as much as the animal.
Yeah. Oh,
because like, I don't want to get hurt by something. I don't want to put myself into a situation where I love animals, but I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to die.
So as cool as a scar may be, no thank you.
I'd rather say I saw one from a distance and say, yeah, I took my hand off.
Yeah. Well, with so one thing, how, or like, what are some of like the most blatant, how do I word this? What's like, is diving it? So a lot of pictures that I see go all over free diving pages, on Pinterest, all that kind of stuff, like divers diving into spinner dolphin pods. What is like, the, if they're passing by, what should you do? Can you dive into them?
Absolutely not. Physically, yes. Technically, no. So, you know, again, with the Marine Mammal Protection Act, it's federal guidelines. Like, it's not just like, oh, you shouldn't do this. Like, it is legal rules put in place with these animals. And so to reiterate, it specifies not approaching within 50 yards. It doesn't specify, however, if these animals come into your area, it is up to you to, if possible, move out of the way, you know, give them their space. Or in the case of dolphins, sometimes they just pass by. If they're sleeping, you generally don't hear them. Sometimes they'll come by super quick. You don't have time to get out of the way. You just have to stay at the surface, stay calm, let them do their thing. The entire point of it is not to disrupt their natural behaviors. And like, you know, they're smart. They're likely not going to see you as a threat if you don't give them a reason to. They're curious, they're social. If they are more awake, sometimes they're more playful. Letting them go about their you know, natural behaviors would likely result in a more positive interaction than people trying to chase after them, dive into the group to get closer. They don't like that.
Yeah.
That's threatening, that stresses them out. They don't want that. So, you know, if you're out in the water, I mean, I'd say this goes for most animals. If they are comfortable enough with you where you're at, they'll be, you know, they'll be fine with that. It's not up to you to force the interaction. So if they pass by, just stay where you're at, let them do their thing. Following them, diving down next to them, into the group, around them, you know, moving closer to them, that is all illegal. That is all not what you should be doing. I make it an effort when I, you know, if I post things to specify that that's not what I do, because mm-hmm. I don't want people to think, you know, practice what you preach. I don't want people out there to be like, oh, well, he does it to him. Like, I specify that I do stay at the surface. Most of my photos are taken at the surface, like at surface level, to specifically show that, because kind of back to the social media thing, you know, people post these things, like, I think people should post cool stuff. I think, you know, we should be sharing all these amazing things that the world has to offer with people who likely won't ever get to see them, but they should have a right to know that it was done well, that this is how things should go. You know, if you're going to post something, do it right and make it a teachable moment.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like one thing too is with a lot of these pictures, especially like just how some content creators are like pushing out content on like a schedule, reposting or, you know, posting a lot of footage from like the same interaction, which is fine. But a lot of times they are, not a lot of times, but there are many interactions that I've seen that are done wrong. And then it creates like a false expectation of how like seeing a spinner dolphin will go for like people. I have never, I think once, had a spinner dolphin get relatively close, but for the most part, every time I have ever seen them, they were swimming past and did not stop. But I feel like I see a lot of videos on TikTok of people within a pod, divers in the pod, play, like some people like physically playing with them, like with leaves kind of a thing, and being very, very, very close to the dolphins. And it creates like this like false expectation. Like if you see someone playing with a leaf with a dolphin, then you go to Hawaii and you're like, oh, I want to, this is a spot. We're going to spend the night at the beach and then get in the water in the morning. And the spinner dolphins are quiet and moving really slow because they're sleeping. And then people want those cool interactions. And that's when I think for the most part, those they're tried to be forced, which is when people dive into them, chase after them, because they want that interaction they saw online, which is really one in a million, even for people that dive all the time, I would say. I don't know how, if that makes sense or if you agree.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Like anytime these people, and when I use the term photographer or these people who post this stuff, like I'm not talking about like your Nat Geo photographers or anything like that. Like everything they do is under permit, often yeah. Not even in, you know, US waters. I'm talking about the people here who have a camera, go out in the water, realize they can do these things and get a lot of followers for it. Live your life. I'm not here to judge, but if you're gonna do it right. Or at least be transparent about what you're doing. I think I can't even count how many times I've seen someone caption their post, literally verbatim, "Oh, so blessed to see, for these beauties to come say hi this morning," or something along those lines. And then the video is literally them diving down below the surface up to the group, and then them like splitting up, and then following one, like this twisting of animals when literally they're passing by, they're in a close, tight-knit bunch.
Yeah.
And it was posted at 8 a.m., obviously from this particular beach, which, you know, if you're listening to this and you know that beach, you know that beach.
Yeah.
And so that's just something where I'm like, people do this all the time, and those are the videos that get the most likes because they are the most interesting to watch. They're the coolest. They give these people, like you were saying, this false impression of what it's gonna be like. So they come here, they know where to go because of the tag location, they know what time to go because that's when you posted it. And now they think that's acceptable to do. And they've implemented signs now at this one particular beach. People don't read signs. People don't want to take the time to be educated on these matters because they weren't taught that in the first place.
Yeah.
They didn't come here with the expectation of, oh, I'm gonna have to learn. They came here with the expectation of, I get to do this super cool thing with, you know, record it with my GoPro, go back home, tell everybody I know I did this, put it on Facebook. I know everybody else who goes has this expectation that they can come here and do that same thing. And it's just this sick cycle because someone put a cool video without saying anything. They just said, this is so cool.
Well, I remember this one beach we're talking about. I remember one morning, I think we drove down. I think you were there, you're in a different car. And the beach was full of students who had slept the night, spent the night at this beach to then dive with dolphins.
Which is illegal here, by the way.
At 8 in the morning. And we got there at like 10, probably. We were not getting there in the morning to do a dolphin dive. We just wanted to go dive at this location. And there's so many students, so many cars. And a lot of times this beach is not like that, but there are these mornings where just for some reason, every student and their mother are spending the night to try and the second a dolphin pod shows up, everyone's running in the water to go and get that experience. And if you ask them, they say, oh, we're here to dolphin dive. We're here to dolphin dive. And it was one of those. And like, I've gone out in the, like, again, like you said, practice what you preach. Hi, I went to Oahu and I did not know they were regulations. Lucky me, never had an interaction to where I was like given the opportunity to do something wrong because I never saw dolphins for a long, long time. But I went out there at like the butt crack of dawn multiple times. I would not sleep at the beach because it terrifies me. I did not know it was illegal, but it terrifies me because I'm just scared of things. But me and my friends would drive at like 5 in the morning to try and get there so we could see dolphins. And it never happened, which I'm grateful for now because I don't know how I would feel now knowing I had been breaking regulation. But like, I understand like going for the intention and you're going, and I try to be pretty transparent with people in conversation and say that I have done things driven by the desire for a picture. I will not lie. I have done it many times. And those were kind of those moments, like you want a dolphin interaction. I was like, oh, that'd be a sick photo to talk about like wild dolphin versus captive dolphin and all the cool things I'm doing while I live here. And not everyone is selfish. That not all my dives were selfishly driven. I'm just saying sometimes that happened. But, and there are, I think there are photographers that like you that are not driven to have a dolphin interaction and aren't driven selfishly. And some people like genuinely do have really great dolphin interactions without pushing it. And it's, but because of social media, unless they're disclosing it, you may never know. And that is one thing I love about your posts. You always put the disclosure about staying 50 yards away. If the dolphin swam close and you guys just stuck it out, if it was, and then you'll sometimes like give the evidence that like, you did not seek them out. It happened and it was very natural, which I just love. I think the transparency is phenomenal. Because it creates like an under, I think it helps for like the consumer of the content. And it's also educational for when someone does come, like if they come on a vacation and they've seen your photos and they're able to remember, oh, I need to stay 50 yards away. Oh, I can't dive on top. And maybe that keeps them from going on one of the ridiculous catamaran dolphin dive boats or diving into a pod and harassing. And that's kind of, I love that you do that because I love you.
Well, thank you. I mean, I definitely will say that I have not always been like this. You know, I mean, none of this stuff is inherent knowledge. You have to learn all of this. Like when I first came here, I didn't know about the regulations. I didn't know. And it's taken a long time of, you know, experience, research, hearing from people, all these different things that have gotten me to the point where I'm like, okay, now I'm in a position where I understand what you shouldn't do, why you shouldn't do it, what you should say to people who are doing it, how you should say it. I mean, you know, my posts, I love posting lots of, so I post lots of photos of them. Many of the photos are from the same moment. Like, it's not like every time I post it's another time. I haven't seen them hundreds of times. It's just been a few lucky encounters. And like, so that beach, I've specifically stopped going there merely out of not being associated. Every time you go.
It's also a pain, but the last time I went was for our Halloween dive, and that's because the other beach was just so dirty.
Yeah. And like, yeah, I'm not going to say like, don't go to this beach.
It has good diving.
It's great. Like when we would go, we'd go in the morning because the conditions were best. Like as the day goes on, it gets windy.
It is a beautiful spot.
Yeah, unfortunately, the dolphins also think that.
Yeah.
So that, like, you know, there's bound to be overlap. And, you know, if it's the ocean, if you go to the ocean, you're gonna run into things that also live there. But if you go there and you specifically target out these things, and, like, you know, like you were saying, all the people who they'll wait on the beach, once they see the fins, they'll shoot out into the water. Already that is not a legitimate interaction, because now if you get out in the water and you just sit there, that doesn't count.
Yeah,
you went out there for that. If you go out there and at some point while you're out there, you know, they come around, like, even if, you know, you see them down the way, if you just go out into your own spot and they come by, if at that point you choose, you know, you don't do negative behaviors, I'm not going to fault you for that. Like, the beach I go to mostly and where I see them mostly, if I run into them, it's just out of coincidence.
Yeah. Look.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they're wild animals. They're not, you know, it's not something where they're always going to be here when, like, it's
not a schedule.
It's definitely not scheduled. It's complete luck. You know, my most intimate interactions have, you know, it's all just so, you know, what's the word? Situational, where it just was right place, right time. Not a lot of other people around to, you know, break up the behavior. And, you know, you experience the best things kind of randomly, and at that point it's up to you not to mess it up.
Yeah, no, definitely. But yeah, that's, it's one of those things about social media that there's a thin line, like you said, like, interact, like, but do it safely. Even with animals where there aren't regulations, that's one, like, that's something within the dive community that's talked more about, with like invertebrate species with fish that don't have regulations about just interacting. There's like regulations about taking. You have to have certain kind of permits if you want to like catch that kind of stuff. But like your starfish, your sea urchins, there's puffer fish that are like weirdly okay with humans and have sought out, quote, sought out petting, those kind of things, that there's a lot of debate within the dive community, within our own community, if like it's okay, how do you do it, should you post about it, because well you may be grabbing the sea urchin in a really good way, like telling if it's like super held onto its rock, or if it's not, then it's safe to go, so you don't plot any of its feet, kind of a thing, not tossing around, not like throwing it out of the water, not just dropping it, like if that's okay, because if you're not showing the whole interaction, it could just show someone pick up, take picture, do whatever you want, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it just trickles down. So like if you were treating our megafauna and not abiding by their regulations, why would we do such with the rest of fauna?
Yeah, like I think, you know, how I've always seen interactions, is it pretty much boils down to like four things. An interaction is good or bad based on the species you're interacting with. So is it, you know, your humpback whale or your cushion star? The intent behind the interaction, like, are you just like, you know, you just appreciate this animal, you want to see it closer, or are you trying to use this animal for your own gain? Are you trying to, you know, exploit it for something other than just like interest? It's a your behavior that you are performing and how that animal reacts to it. Because, you know, I mean, so like, I guess with the example of the dolphins, if you're gonna sit there and just, you know, as they're passing by, they're doing their rounds, whatever, if you sitting there doesn't seem to impact them, one might call that a more positive interaction. Whereas if you're diving down into them and they're, you know, if the tight group starts to split in different directions, if calves stop nursing, you know, if they're slapping their tail at the surface, they're, you know, tracing bubbles behind them, stuff like that. Even, you know, the intent might not to be intrusive if they don't know what they're doing, but how that animal responds to you obviously tells you how that interaction is.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if you, like, I pick up invertebrates, I don't throw them, I don't do anything that would inherently bring them harm, but some people do see just the simple act of holding them as negative, which is completely understandable. Like, I understand that, you know, when I hold them, it's out of appreciation. But that's just, again, something where, you know, there's not a strict rule against it. That's more up to, you know, your moral standing. You know, depending on it, there are biological implications with something. So like if you have, you know, nasty, not really safe sunscreen all over your hands, you don't want to hold stuff that it'll, you know, absorb into its skin or things like that. There's just a lot of things people don't think about, don't know. With wildlife interactions, I would say it all boils down to do the research. You can never be too educated on any of these matters. And like, I spend a lot of time reading different things. And like, I mean, Google is your best friend as a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wikipedia is a good starting point, but like, just keep researching, keep learning more and more, because the better you understand how things work, how animals work, their behaviors, you know, stuff like that, it'll completely change how you see interactions.
Yeah. Well, and one thing, like I tell people, if you don't know much about that animal, can't differentiate maybe like what species it is, even maybe don't like with sea urchins is one I think of. Like if you just go to grab like a pencil urchin, those ones are very hard to get off a rock. And like I never force those. I've a lot of my photos, they're dead. But there have been a couple where they aren't. And essentially I put quotes for people who are listening. I'm putting air quotes around snuck up on an urchin because that's not how that works. But there are like certain size, I don't even know how to explain it, but I just like there are certain sizes, they're located in a certain place, and just the initial like little push on them, I could kind of tell like if it would come up. And that's why it's so like with that species, I'm like, please don't try these pencil urchins. They are so firmly stuck to their substrate, which are usually the rocks, that if you try to force them out, you're going to break off a spine, you're going to rip off their tube feet. I have been very lucky a couple times to have been able to get one off without harming it. And I don't get them off if it's not going to come that way, or they're dead, or I find them dead. Or versus, your collector's urchins, which literally are so loosely hung on to the rocks they're on that you can just gently, you can blow on them and those ones will come off. That discerning that, and even like if it's not, like if you do go to pick one up, if there's a lot of like resistance, maybe don't grab that individual because ripping out their tube feet, smashing, like you may grip too hard with some urchins and you squish them. Also, some will get very stressed close to the surface and they will expel their reproductive gametes all over you. That has happened to me
Well,
once.
we all can't be as lucky as you.
Oh, thank you. But like, and I felt bad. How there were like literally 1,000 urchins around me when this happened, but I put it back and I was like, I'm so sorry, little man. But that was one of those, but like besides that, those are like two urchin species. Like they're not the same. The way I've handled them isn't the same the way you've handled them as well. Like not the same, different starfish, different, all that kind of stuff. Like it's so different. And that I always try to say, like, learn about the species and then like how their body functions. If there are like blogs, maybe about, I don't know, blogs about interacting with sea urchins. For some people, don't grab them, just put your little finger and feel them give you a little hug. That's what it's okay. That's lovely too. I do that a lot. Just let them give you a little hug. It's adorable. I love sea urchins.
It's so funny that you said there might be blogs. Like, so last week I literally was doing all this research on handling stress with echinoderms specifically because I wanted to post about it. And so like, yeah, there was literally like all this stuff out there. There have been studies done on stress and like, so it's like not gonna get into it all right now.
Yeah.
Look for my post in the future.
We'll read the post.
But yeah, so I'm like it literally comes down to the extent of the interaction, what is happening during the interaction, how the animal responds to it. So it's like, sea stars, a lot of species, they have this incredible ability to regrow at times their entire body from a portion if it gets damaged. Just because they can do that, does that mean I'm gonna go out there and like start snapping off sea star arms? No. You don't want a
Repopulate.
situation. Yeah, you don't want a situation. Yeah, I'm not just gonna be like overpopulation, just do it to every sea star. You don't want to hurt things.
Yeah.
So like, you go out there like you were saying, with if there's resistance, like if the sea star loses a couple of tube feet, it will grow them back. But you don't want to intentionally do things that are going to put an animal in harm's way.
Yeah.
So,
Sometimes they
just,
don't
doing things
recover, even from losing a couple tube feet. Because like
yeah.
I've caught a lot of urchins because I worked in a lab and we'd go out with students, and there were nights like where we'd be doing labs and we'd catch a few things to bring back to our like lab location. And just there's not a TA for every student. And just sometimes, obviously, people, you could, I mean, I could tell when we got the little rock boring urchin that a lot of their tube feet were ripped out and next morning dead. A lot of other factors play into that, like the stress of being handled by a lot of people. But that's the thing, like, especially with invertebrates, is it is really hard because it's not like a dolphin where there are extensive studies on physical, like, that are more widely known physical studies of behavior, blowing bubbles, tail slapping, all that kind of stuff. There's sharks with putting their pec fins down, jaw popping. Jaw popping is a thing too, in cetaceans. Sea urchins will not pop their jaw at you when they're mad at you, you know, kind of a thing. Yeah. And so it's harder. And a lot of times people don't care about invertebrates, but you know, whatever. I care about invertebrates, but it's just one of those things where with every species, I think people should be educated. And with like echinoderms, I feel like we're lucky because tide pooling is such a cool hobby. So there are a lot of great resources and studies about like interacting with these species, how they may do above water. And it'll vary obviously per species, like where they are in the intertidal. But like up here, tide pooling is a huge thing. So there's all kinds of like tide pooling etiquette and posters about it, books, and they talk about like how you should be handling or shouldn't be handling these animals, which I think is awesome. And that's one thing, like when people have asked me about like, well, why do you hold starfish? Why do you hold sea urchins? Because yeah, I've had people not like that I've done that and message me and say they think it's inappropriate, which I respect because I understand. I'm like, yeah, you can definitely say my behavior totally could influence someone to do that, and it could inadvertently cause death, harm to that animal that I really like. And while I did it respectfully, that doesn't mean everyone is going to. And that's kind of like the mantle we take upon ourselves as people on the internet doing things exactly. On the internet.
Exactly. And like, I mean, it also just plays into like, okay, one person doing it might not go badly, but when it's dozens and dozens of people every day for a year, all this stuff, like, it's the long-term thing.
Yeah.
If people are doing things repeatedly badly, it will have, you know, poor results. Whereas if people are doing things respectfully, carefully, safely, yada yada.
Yeah. And there are totally safe. I mean, I'm in the camp as you, there are safe ways to have these interactions. I think these interactions can be really powerful, like taking a kid tide pooling or even like just to a tide pool, like at an aquarium. I cannot tell you how fascinating. I still love to go to aquarium tide pools and just poke, you know, give the anemone a little poke and feel it hug your finger. Do it to I've held a million urchins. That's not true. Not an accurate number, but like I've held a lot of urchins. I still love to go to a tide pool and just let it hug my little finger. It's fascinating. And like watching a kid do it is also like, it can teach something more powerful than a picture of a sea urchin, because they just look like spiky rocks.
And that is why I think it is so vital for people to get out there. If you are landlocked, there are plenty of wildlife on land. If you are by the water, whatever, go out and see the wildlife. And obviously, research it first.
Yeah.
Know what you're getting into. Because, like, you know, with urchins, there are certain ones you don't want to touch.
Oh,
mm-hmm. You want to, you know, not get hurt.
I've like, definitely touched ones I should not have touched many times.
And, like, again, like, I've whatever, there's certain ways to do
the things. One time I was saving it from getting eaten by a wrasse, it did then shoot one of its spines out at me and I had a very sore thumb for the rest of the day, but I still put it back into a nice spot and I waited for it to anchor down before I left, but I was cursing at it in my head.
there's, you know, is everything perfect? I mean, with stuff like this that don't have specific rules, it really is up to the individual to decide.
Yeah.
So that is just why it's so, so important for people to just be educated in the matter, know what you're getting into. because obviously the least impactful experience is going to be not touching it at all, not being near it at all. For big animals, zoom. Cameras are literally meant to get you closer to an animal without physically doing it.
Yeah.
With small animals, there will always be the people who will say, don't touch it at all. You are not wrong. They're still animals. I'm gonna handle. But you do it safely, respectfully.
Yeah.
With an education to back it up.
Yeah.
So go out there, live your life, experience what the world has to offer. Just don't be a dick about it.
Yeah. Be respectful and do a little bit of education beforehand. I mean, there's like great, there's guidebooks. Like I have like 4 different field guides for like tide pooling for like all the different species up here. Like one seaweed focus, but then it talks about other kind of species. And then there's all like, and it has all kinds of information about how to safely handle certain species, which ones not to handle because it's not safe, all that kind of stuff. And there's stuff like that too for like Hawaii animals. You could crack, man, I crack a book. There's also like great online resources just to look up and look into. I think that's probably the most powerful thing. But how do I word this question? Okay. What is something maybe you wish was better within the dive community? So the people that, not the tourists, not people who aren't super aware, people who are diving regularly, and maybe just if you could like look at the community and like make everyone do one thing universal that may help the situation, what do you think it should be, could be?
I really wish it would just be promoting responsible interactions. I don't necessarily care interactions with what, when I just wish there was a larger focus on everybody. You know, if it's marine mammals, following the rules. If it's octopus, it's not doing things distastefully or things that would harm the animal. Like, I just wish there was more focus on appreciating the animals for being the animals and not something, not a tool for them to get further. Like,
yeah,
you know, during whale season, people with boats, they'll go out offshore and swim with whales, do whatever, because like it's hard to, regulations are in place, but they're hard to regulate. Resources aren't there. It's just hard to keep everyone in line.
Yeah.
A lot of it is definitely built on, you know, honesty and doing the right thing because it's the right thing. Most people don't do that, and it's just very frustrating. Like, I come from a science background long before I come from a photography background. So in my mind, I love these animals. I would love nothing more than to be right next to them, examine them, see them for all that they have to offer. But there always is that little, you know, that voice in my head that's like, don't do that. It's like, okay, you could swim a lot closer, but you shouldn't. And then there are the people who, this is a wide generalization, there are plenty of people who do things respectfully. I love you, I appreciate you. If I follow you, probably do that. I specifically won't follow certain people. I'll go through their posts if I see things that I'm definitely like, that's not right. You know, it's me, I don't know this person. I'm literally judging how I think they are as a person, how they interact with things based off what they post, based off how they caption things, what I see. So I think putting this plainly, I wish everyone involved, you know, whether it's just people you know, people who put stuff on social media, whatever it is, if you present your work, be transparent. Everything should just be done with respect all around.
Yeah. Beautiful. Respect. Just respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Exactly. So, Connor, what do you do now for your job?
So I work at the University of Hawaii Health and Stranding Lab. I started there November 2019 as a volunteer. For a few months, COVID hit. We had to stop going, unfortunately. July of last year, I started doing my undergrad research project with them. I was studying cytokine herpes virus. So I did that for a few months. And right as I was graduating, a position opened up at the lab and they actually offered it to me. So since then, I've been a research tech for them. So a little bit about the lab. They handle all whale and dolphin strandings here in Hawaii, as well as the greater Pacific. The basic process starts when someone reports a stranded cetacean, typically through a NOAA hotline, or local authorities, pull the contact that leads at our facility to respond. Depending on the species or the location, members of the lab will either go to the animal or it will be brought to our facility. Usually the lab works very closely with Hawaiian cultural practitioners, as well as NOAA officials, DLNR, and other state agencies. Because of the importance of cetaceans in Hawaiian culture, these events are usually handled fairly delicately, just to protect the integrity of the animal. So besides public safety, the biggest focus is just treating them with respect. Once we are able to actually handle the carcass, necropsies are performed either in the field or in lab to assess the total condition of the animal. Eventually, these samples will go through various testing with the end goal of determining a cause of death.
What species have you gotten to work with or on? I guess not with.
So I've gotten to experience quite a few since I've been there. My first, it was a necropsy. I use air quotes just because it was kind of a partial. It was a Cuvier's beaked whale that had actually stranded in the another island in the Pacific. I believe it was Wake Island, but I kind of forget. So that was last November, and the necropsy was actually done on the island, and we only got portion. So it was kind of the same, but my first legitimate one was the day before Christmas Eve this past year. It was a pygmy sperm whale. It was incredible. They're just so fascinating, such incredible animals. For everyone listening, if you don't know cetaceans that well, I beg of you to just start Googling them. There's like 90 species. They're so fun. So many of them are just so wild looking, especially the Kodia, like a dolphin mixed with a shark. It's awesome. So that was, you know, the first introductions to it. Since then, I've helped with, I believe, 3 striped dolphins, a Fraser's dolphin, another Kodia, and then about a month or two ago, there was a stranded humpback. I helped respond to it, but I actually didn't take part in any of the, moving and handling of the animal. It was a 2-day process, and the first day I actually got my second COVID shot. So the next day I was out of commission and missed it. So like I said, this year we've had kind of an unusual amount. All the testing and stuff, still kind of figuring all that stuff out, but I've been lucky enough to experience a lot since being a part of the team, so that's been, I've learned a lot and I love that part of it.
Yeah, has your photography played a part in this lab or position at all?
A little bit. With these events, like photos and documentation, are a huge part of it, just because it's, you always need stuff to refer back to. And so usually with all the necropsies, starting, from the stranding event itself to the actual necropsy, photos are a huge portion of it. So usually COVID has kind of ruined it. Usually there is one particular person who will focus on photos. Now our team is a lot smaller, who's allowed to actually be involved in these things. You know, I've had the camera in my hands and gotten to kind of play that part a bit, but it's, you know, it's more just taking a photo of something specific, not like, oh, the art form of it. Yeah. Like it's not taking photos for people to see, it's taking photos for documentation.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all our stuff, it's very sensitive material. We don't, nothing is like, you know, shown to everybody like, oh, let me post this, like nothing like that. So, which is very different. It's every, obviously everything I take, I'm like, I want everybody to see this.
Yeah.
So yeah, just less public, but the photos are still there.
Yeah. Didn't you help with like a study that just came out and you took pictures of like the cephalopod beaks that were found in a stomach?
Yeah, since that was made public, definitely didn't talk. I mean, it wasn't anything, like, it wasn't the huge research I did or anything.
But it's cool.
It was basically just going through the stomach contents of a false killer whale that had stranded. Cascadia Research, they actually knew which animal it was based off dorsal fin photos, so it was kind of big for them because they had been following this animal for a long time, and then so going through the stomach contents, a lot of these oceanic cetaceans feed on a lot of squid species, so in their stomach, all that remains are just the beaks, and so when, by pulling all those beaks together, they're actually sent to a expert who can identify them. And this study, I'm trying to think, I think it's on the, it might be on the UH News site for anyone interested, but they actually have found, I believe, a species of pelagic octopus that has never been noticed in their diet before. So it was like a new find of something that they're eating, which, because they're an endangered species, you know, is big news. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so on the article, the photos I took, so.
Besides the fact you're one of my dear friends and I love you, it is Pride Month, so I wanted to have marine biologists or people within the marine science field on my podcast this month who are all a part of the LGBTQ plus community. So we just had Mackenzie on, and so I kind of want to talk to you a little bit about your experience in the field being gay, and like if there's anything that you've noticed that you may want to like talk about, and then any kind of advice to people coming into the field, because I know a lot of people reach out to me say asking how accepting this field may be and are very worried about that.
Yeah, so you know, I'm one of the gays. Honestly, it might be different for other people. I have not had that much pushback or, you know, praise for it in this field. It's just of what I've experienced, people have been accepting, mostly just kind of don't care. It's like, okay, yeah, just I talk about my boyfriend, whatever, all this stuff. Like people, they're nice about it. Clearly that isn't going to happen everywhere you go, unfortunately. And so kind of just what I would say for people is just like, you know, be honest. Like it's kind of, you know, might be overused, but just be yourself, because if people aren't going to accept that, that's their problem, not yours. So just be happy. There's no point in, you know, tiptoeing around other people because you don't want to make it weird or anything like that. Like you are who you are, and if they're going to be shitty about it, like
that's on them.
Yeah, you don't, that's not all your responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just be happy, be proud.
I love that,
because if you're in marine science, we don't care about the people at all. We are here for marine life, the ocean. We're here for that.
Yeah. Is there anything within like maybe the dive community that has like, has that played a part at all, or is it kind of like the same story? No issue.
I feel like fairly similar. I mean, I feel like within the dive community, you know, a lot of people, for me at least, it seems like divers and marine scientists aren't so far apart. Mm-hmm. You know, they share a fairly big bond of, you know, love for the ocean, all this stuff like that. So I feel like people in both areas have a somewhat similar mindset, just kind of around people, around the world, stuff like that. So I feel like, in my experience, a lot of the divers, if not already in the community, very accepting, very loving. Usually if we're all together, it's for one purpose, and that's mm-hmm. to enjoy the water. Obviously, this is my experience. I'm not going to speak for everybody. I've just, you know, have been lucky enough that I've gotten these pleasant experiences out of it.
Yeah, which is, I'm very happy for. So yeah, and then we'll wrap it up. What is some advice you would give to aspiring marine scientists and or photographers? You can pick one or the other. You can maybe do something that applies to both.
Basically for everybody, I just think in general, like, appreciate the opportunities that come, whatever shape or form they come in, like in our field, in this area, in certain parts of the world, like we experience things that many people aren't even going to see in their lifetime. I just think I'm forever grateful for the life I've gotten to live these last few years. And it's knowing that there's so much more to experience that really keeps me going. So I just think, in whatever form it takes, like, live your life to the fullest and just be so happy with the experiences you've gotten. Because I do think social media has really warped a lot of people's minds about what a successful life is. And if you're not doing that, then what you're doing isn't good enough.
Yeah.
And like, you can only work with what you got. So I just think just be so happy with what you've accomplished and where you've gotten so far. And I'm proud of you. So keep going. Next, I'd say just never stop learning. Definitely, if you're a future marine scientist, it's absolutely vital that you understand the field you're in, like whatever, like however that takes, biology, chemistry, oceanography, all that stuff. Like, it's so important that you just understand what's happening, even after you graduate. Just like, don't stop learning. You should never get to a point where you think you've learned enough because you haven't. For photographers, I think it's so important that you understand what it is that you are photographing, whether it's animals or the land. Like, once you understand it, I think you can appreciate it better. Because our world is so cool and it deserves more appreciation than it gets.
Yeah.
Oh, and last thing. Don't let the knowledge stop with you. Pass it on in your posts and, you know, talk story with people, whatever. The whole point of information is that everybody should have it. Everybody should know these things, especially when it comes to the importance of our wildlife and our resources. When people are educated, change will be so much simpler. So please share the information you've got.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
So beautiful.
Thank you. I stole it. I'm kidding. I didn't steal that from someone. It's probably somewhere out there on the internet.
Just reading it.
It's someone's Oscar acceptance speech.
And last, plug anything you want to plug. How should people find you? Is there any way we can support your amazing photography?
So I am on Instagram at Connor Human, ConnerHuman, because most people spell my name wrong, which is totally fine, whatever. That's pretty much all I'm on. I have an inactive Twitter that's like, I just don't use anything else. So find me on Instagram, DM me, say hi. I am so lacking in interactions with people right now, so I would love to talk to someone. That's pretty much, I can put my Venmo and you can just send me money. That's fine too.
Hey, I'm down for that.
Cool, send me money, I'm for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, so if you follow me on Instagram, you'll eventually see that I'm selling prints. Because I'm not right now, but I will be. So
they're amazing. I have your shark print from your last print drop on my bookshelf, which is all ocean books, because I have, my entire personality is just the ocean.
I mean, like,
decor,
good.
Books, clothes, everything I do. But thank you so much for coming on.
I'm so happy you asked. I literally, as soon as you sent that text, I could not stop smiling. I was like, oh my God.
It's all for you.
Thank you. Honestly, I'm so passionate about the ocean and a lot of these topics, especially now that I've seen them more. And I am so much better written than I am spoken. I tried my darndest for you people, but
you were great.
Thank you. If anyone listening wants to chat, wants to know more, all this stuff, please message me, because I love talking about this stuff and I really don't get a chance to accept in my Instagram posts, and that's
which are amazing.
No one asked for that. That's just me pushing it on. So please DM me, whatever. I would love to talk about this more, but I know it's been a long time already. So
okay. Well, I will let you go, but everyone should go follow and support Connor Bay.